Hey, Culture and Conversations family. I'm your host, Jameson Smallwood, and I'm about to make you guys part of the conversation. Hey guys, thank you for downloading. Thank you guys for subscribing to, and thank you guys for sharing Culture and Conversations. Before we get too far into this episode, please go by your favorite podcast listening platform and rank Culture and Conversations with a 5-star review. It really does help when you review the episodes and the podcast and let people know that, hey, you listen to Culture and Conversations and you dig it. Up next on Culture and Conversations, I have the privilege of sharing with you a very great, yes, very great conversation that I had with Noelle Singleton, the founder of Afro Swimmers. Noelle stops by to share her love for swimming, her passion for helping people overcome their fear in the water, and talking about what she went through as she discovered how the water helped heal her life, her body, and her soul. Up next on Culture and Conversations. Hey guys, I am Jameson Smallwood, your host of Culture and Conversations. Thank you guys for being a part of the conversation. I want to tell you guys about some cool things that have been going on with the show. Just kind of reflect a little bit before we get to our interview with Noelle Singleton, the founder of Afro Swimmers. I just want to share with you just some things that have happened to me and just the wonderful experiences that I've had podcasting lately. So one of the things that every podcaster aspires to is monetization. Usually when you create a podcast, the idea, the hope is that you can get to a point where you can benefit yourself and at least sustain the podcast, right? Where the podcast is self-sustaining. And it comes from people who listen to the show, people like you. And you guys make it possible first by giving us your attention as listeners. And then secondly, by believing so much in what we're doing with the show and the content that we're producing as podcasters, that you decide that, hey, I want to support this particular podcast, or I want to support this particular show by making donations, by buying merch, by buying swag. So that's the goal, right, of every podcaster, is to produce great content that people fall in love with, and ultimately it leads to a path to monetization. So I started a Cash App, or what they call a cash tag in the Cash App world, called Smallwood Media. And that is the tag that I use to solicit donations for the podcast, Culture and Conversations. So all the stuff that I do, whether it's on Facebook, whether it's on the actual audio podcast feed, the things that I produce for YouTube, the videos that I do on YouTube, the sit down interviews I do at the house, when I go out and review restaurants, all of that is supported by people who make donations via Cash App by Smallwood Media. So that's the cash tag, right? Smallwood Media. And, you know, it's been out there for a couple of weeks now, maybe a couple of months, and I haven't gotten a donation. Full disclosure, right? Because you guys are part of the family, so I share everything with you because you guys are the reason that I have this platform. So I thank you so much. So I don't mind sharing. So no donations came in, and I didn't make a big deal out of it. I didn't get on Facebook during hashtag the group chat every Thursday night at 9:30 Eastern Standard Time and yell at people, say, why don't you guys donate to the program and donating to the podcast? I didn't do that. And I'm glad I didn't do that, because that's not why I'm here. I want the show to support itself, sure enough, but it doesn't cost me a lot to put on Culture and Conversations. And as I get more and more support from people like you who are listening, then I can do more things with the show. So all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, sometime between the end of that live stream that I do every Thursday night at 9:30 Eastern Standard Time, call hashtag the group chat on Facebook, on Culture and Conversations on Facebook, I got a Cash App donation via Smallwood Media from Jesus Furcon. He put a hashtag in there called Kept the Faith, and that's all was in the notes. And he gave me a donation that allowed me to pay for the hosting for Culture and Conversations for a whole month. And I don't know if you guys know what that felt like to me as a podcaster. I don't know if you guys know what that felt like as somebody who's creating something every week and sharing it with the world, but to have touched somebody through the content, to have given somebody enough value where they felt like investing in what I was doing and making a contribution to my business, to my entrepreneurship, to my activism that I do through this podcast, it empowered me. It humbled me. It made me determined to go harder, to produce more and more great content. And it just really left me speechless. So shout out to Jesus Furcon, man. I appreciate you, Jesus. Jesus has been a day one supporter of Culture and Conversations. And, you know, he's always been very supportive of this experiment of me podcasting and trying to create content. And just giving me that donation gave me so much encouragement. And I wanted to take time to shout him out on the show and just make sure that people know what he means to me and this show. How he took his time and his effort and his resources to empower the show for you guys. So he deserves that this moment and this shout out, because he empowered the show for a whole month for everybody else listening. And, you know, it just is, it's just amazing to me when I get that kind of love from people. You know, Jesus is a solid dude, and I just really want to thank him for taking the time to do that. And I want to make sure I shout him out one more time. Appreciate you, Jesus Furcon. He's just a solid, he's really conscious and focused as a brother, encouraging people who are trying to do things that are positive. And that's what you need when you're creating something. You know, I promised to do a wrap up of PodFest 2019, and being down at PodFest down in Orlando this year was an amazing experience. Just being around people who are creating just like I am creating, who are striving, who are trying to build something with a microphone and the internet. And it was just empowering to be in that type of creative energy, that just zeal, just people who are trying and trying to create it. So, we appreciate you guys as listeners. We appreciate you guys, for as an audience, for being a part of what we're doing, especially at Smallwood Media. And I know that I always don't say things you agree with. I know I don't always say things that, you particularly like, but yet you give me an opportunity to say it, and I can't do nothing but thank you for that. You know, but back to PodFest quickly. PodFest is a time that I'll never forget, because it gave me insight into the world of podcasting and seeing what people were doing. I saw people who were doing it at the highest level, people who were leveraging their podcast to become inventors and to solve problems and building platforms that were, you know, empowering people all over the world. And I saw that at PodFest 2019. Then I also saw, you know, people who were fledgling podcasters, kind of not where I'm at, where I've been doing it for over a year, but just, you know, I met a really cool podcaster by the name of Walker Near, and I hope to be on his show soon. Hashtag the Walk Show. Shout out to the Walk Show. You can find that in iTunes. And you know, he's just a guy who just started podcasting a couple of weeks before the conference and got a chance to come down and visit and got a free ticket, and he flew into town just to go visit and hang out at the PodFest and see what podcasting was about. And I met him, and he just was cool. You know, he's just trying to do the same thing, and I just wanted to encourage him. You know, I said, man, dude, you've got a great voice. I mean, you think my voice is great? Hashtag radio voice. This dude has pipes. He has just a great voice. And, you know, he's at that stage where he's trying to see what this thing called podcasting is going to be for him. And, I was really happy to meet him and just encourage him. And just also seeing, podcasters who are from the African American community, black podcasters, that was cool. Just being around, other people who are trying to do things from our cultural perspective. I thought that was really cool. And, you know, but at the same time, being able to show, other communities of people, you know, white podcasters and podcasters from different perspectives and different cultural backgrounds, that, hey, you know, black people are podcasting at a high level too, right? Like, it was cool. Like, it just was a good mix. And, you know, I got a chance to meet vendors, and I got a chance to meet all of these wonderful people in the industry of podcasting. And I got a chance to see how people are attempting to monetize their followings and monetize their audience. And at the same time, I also saw a very real reality that, hey, people aren't making piles of money podcasting. That's not the goal, right? People hope for that to happen, but that's like hitting the lottery. But what people are doing is that out of the love of their heart for the art form, the craft of podcasting, telling the world about their story and their narrative, they are out producing great content and giving people a chance to just hear their heart, and you guys make it possible. So I guess this is a bit of a love fest for the listener today, and on my editorial that I've got opening up the podcast with, it's just about you. It really is. And I want to thank you. Thank each and every one of you. I want to thank the real group chat, hashtag the group chat, the real group chat that I'm a part of, that inspires me, that challenges me, that keeps me thinking about myself, thinking about the world, seeing the world from a different perspective. I don't always agree with them. They don't always agree with me. Most of the time they don't agree with me. But one of the things that I enjoy is just having that opportunity to be in that space, thinking and being critical and seeing the world through a different perspective. And it's not about agreement. It's just about seeing what they're thinking, how they're thinking. And sometimes it's frustrating because iron sharpens iron. That's a rough process. But I feel like at the end of the day, we challenge each other in a loving way underneath the layers of our dynamics in the group chat. And it sponsors great content that comes out in the form of hashtag the group chat, which is a 9:30 every Thursday night Eastern Standard Time live stream that I do on the Culture and Conversations Facebook page. So there's some things I'm experimenting with that just as I wrap up talking about PodFest and all this stuff, because this is the wrap up for PodFest. I promise what, and this is going to be it. So one of the things that I'm going to experiment with hopefully this week, as you're hearing this episode, is that I'm going to experiment with maybe doing another live stream. And that's going to be Sunday night, likely at 7 o'clock, I should say. Sunday night at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on the Culture and Conversations page. And I want to tell you guys why I'm doing it. The biggest thing is that it's a challenge for a lot of people who work later in the evenings and have to get up early in the mornings to stay up at, 12 o'clock at night, listening to me podcast over their phone live. And I want to give more people who may be in a different part of the audience a chance to hear content through that live format. The live format originally started out, for people who don't know, as just me giving you guys kind of like bonus content, because I wanted you to have something for hanging around the Facebook page and being supportive of the show. And so I did that with that in mind. I said, okay, well, let me create this live stream. And also, there's a natural kind of drift as a podcaster that as you have an audio feed to get into the video and to produce even more content around it. Joe Rogan is a great podcaster. He just basically shows you the formula. He gets friends over and they record it, and then they put it out on YouTube, they put it out on these different platforms. So there's a natural tendency to be curious about how to do that at a high level. And I wanted to learn that skill. And thankfully I have. And, but I wanted to give you guys that bonus content on the Facebook page. And lo and behold, after a couple of streams and a couple of efforts and a couple of attempts and just kind of building up some steam at the beginning of the year, I launched, hashtag the group chat, which is, the weekly live stream of the Culture and Conversations podcast every Thursday night at 9:30 Eastern Standard Time. So when that launched, I was blown away by the response, the engagement. I mean, I'm talking about, hundreds of comments, hundreds of views, and, people sharing it and telling their timeline about it and conversations, about, various topics that are a little bit more polarizing than the things I cover typically on Culture and Conversations, the audio stream. So you get the chance to see me and see my face and interact with me and call into the show. And we've got people calling in and the phone lines are lit up and we're having a great time over there. And it just has become a show. And it's not just a bonus show. It's not just a throwaway now. It's like I have to plan for it. I have to produce for it. I have to do show prep, and it's great. And it all came from just podcasting, me thinking about, those people who are interacting with the show on Facebook and social media. So, we're now at a place where, I'm branching out a little bit. And one of the cool things I had a chance to do, and I want to mention it on the show today, is I had a chance to collaborate with Ashley Stewart. Ashley was on episode 37, if I'm not mistaken, where she talks about her work as a chef. And so Ashley reached out to me and we were kind of chit chatting back and forth. And, you know, me and her have remained acquaintances and friends since she came on the show. So we were talking and chit chatting and she was like, hey, you know, it's my birthday weekend. Let's get together and let's go film some content. And I want some sushi. You know, that's what she was thinking about. So I said, well, you know, that's cool. That sounds like a Small Bites episode, hashtag Small Bites. So, you know, on a lark, I found this sushi spot called Yakitori, and I'm going to release a formal episode reviewing it. It's going to be on YouTube, and it's going to also be, the audio from it's going to also be on Culture and Conversations, the audio feed here. But you know, we found this great spot in Smyrna, Georgia, and we went to it and just met up. And I didn't know what to expect because I didn't know exactly how Ashley does her food reviews. She does a great set of content for Instagram at Foodie Cutie and also Food and Stuff ATL on Instagram and on Facebook. And so she does all of this great work around food as a chef and as an influencer. And I didn't know what to expect, but we show up and we walk in and we were greeted by actually the public relations manager for that business. And when we got there, her name is Tia Green. Shout out to Tia. So Tia stops us and she stops me in the parking lot and she says, hey, so I see you with a tripod. Like, who are you? And I tell her I'm Jameson Smallwood. Right. And she's like, well, you have a tripod. Are you a videographer? Are you a photographer? And I said, I just kind of chuckled and I said, I'm a podcaster. And I said that I'm here to meet my friend Ashley. And we're about to have dinner for her birthday. And I'm likely going to review your restaurant. So time I say that, right, Tia goes into full blown public relations management and she alerts the staff. She alerts the waiters. She alerts the chef, the owner of the restaurant. And what results is 2 hours of an amazing afternoon and evening where not only did I get a chance to celebrate Ashley's birthday, but we got a chance to collaborate on some great content that I'm editing down right now. So shout out to Foodie Cutie, Ashley Stewart, for just giving me an opportunity to spend that moment with her and to collaborate with her. And also shout out to Tia Green for being so gracious and making that opportunity available to us and treating us like first class members of the media. That was amazing. I don't even have a press pass, right? Like I don't have any press credentials. The only thing she saw was my bag with my camera and my tripod. And she knew something was up and she sprang into action and she made sure we had a wonderful time. But I will say this too, just in a preview of that episode that's coming out is that regardless of her efforts, the food was amazing. And that's my tease for that episode of Small Bites. It's going to come out in a couple of days. So guys, let me get to the actual meat of the podcast here. And I just want to thank you guys for listening again. And just thank you for just giving me this platform and just the inspiration and the encouragement. And through that, I've had some amazing experiences just because of your ears and just because of your heart. So I just want to tell you once again, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Another great experience that I've had because of podcasting was interviewing Noel Singleton. Noel and I crossed paths on social media. We have some mutual friends and there was some interesting discussions going on social media that we crossed paths on one of the threads related to that discussion. And I discovered that Noel had a very interesting story. She is the founder of Afro Swimmers. Afro Swimmers is an organization that she started to help encourage African Americans to embrace the water, the swimming and the sport of swimming, the disciplines of swimming and just the culture of swimming. And she wanted to change the face of what swimming looks like. And we talk about that in this episode of Culture and Conversations. And in the process, it just was an amazing conversation. One of the best things I love about Culture and Conversations is when I get a chance to talk to amazing guests. And most people think that the guests have to be celebrities on podcasts. And, you know, you look at really big shows and you're thinking like, man, I need to talk to this celebrity or that celebrity. But in my mind, every one of my guests has been a spectacular celebrity in their own right. The world just doesn't know about them. And I think Noel is another one of those gems that's hidden away, just getting ready to surface and be discovered by somebody. And I hope that her work and her activism gets the shine it deserves. So if you guys hear this interview and you guys are impressed by Noel's story, by Noel's organization, please reach out to Noel and let her know that you heard about her on Culture and Conversations, and also share this interview with somebody who might be interested in her story, and just spread the story about Afro swimmers and the great work that Noel Singleton is doing. And I can't wait for you guys to hear more about Noel coming up next on Culture and Conversations. Hey, Culture and Conversations family, I have on the phone a very interesting soul and spirit. Her name is Noel Singleton, and Noel and I are going to talk about her work as a swim instructor, as a swim coach, and her involvement with an organization that I find to be interesting as someone who is maybe possibly one day going to learn how to swim. So I'd like to welcome to the conversation Noel Singleton. Noel, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for being available and making time for my audience. I really appreciate that. So, Noel, I've got a question for you. What is water to you?
What is water? Water is movement. Water is healing. Water is depth. There is peace. Water's at the center of everything that I do and everything that I am. Our bodies are made up of water. We're surrounded by water. There's no way to avoid it. Yes, there's a lot of people that have unhealthy relationships with it. And sometimes when, based on your exposure to water, some people only consider water as something that you drink and you bathe in, and that is their simplicity of water. But to me, the closer I am to water, whether I'm completely engulfed in it, near it, surrounding it, touching it, feeling it, the more in touch with life I feel.
Oh, that's awesome. What brought you to the water for the first time?
Well, growing up, swimming was always a big part of my life. Our family went to the pool constantly. I remember back when I was in fourth grade, I would watch the Olympics on TV, and I actually would mimic some of the techniques and drills that I would see on the sports channel from swimming, collegiate swimming, all of it. And as I got older, I joined the swim team in high school. I did very well. I was actually the captain of the swim team in high school at Martin Luther King. And at the time, I ended up accepting a soccer scholarship to college and transferred to Georgia Southern University, where I graduated from, and ended up teaching swimming. So swimming has always been there. Now, what it has become now, there was definitely something, a catalyst. There was a transition that happened in my adult life that made swimming the priority that it has become. And ultimately became the foundation of the development of what is now Afro Swimmers.
Okay, well, let's take a moment there before we transition into deeper parts of your story. You said you went to the Georgia Southern University. You're talking about the Georgia Southern University Eagles, correct?
That is correct.
All right.
The real GSU.
The real GSU.
Southern Knot State, so there's no confusion. Okay?
All right. I just have to get that out there. I went to Georgia Southern as well, so... I have to always say Hail Southern when it comes up.
Well, you know you're talking to the former Miss Georgia Southern, so that's always been very near to my heart, and I still have my crown, and every now and then I'll dust it off just to remind myself I still got it.
When were you Miss Georgia Southern?
2009,
okay.
Right after I was Miss Black and Gold, 2008.
Okay, all right. So you were a little bit after me. We didn't cross paths while I was at Southern during my time. I was there from 2001 until 2005.
Oh, yeah. By the time you were leaving, I was doing my freshman year at Anderson University.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I was rushing through Georgia Southern as if that was like the worst time of my life. And little did I know, it was really the best time of my life. So.
That the feeling is mutual.
So
I understand everything you just said.
Yeah, that's, we may pick that conversation back up on the back half of our conversation here. So, you know, Noelle, you know, let's talk about this moment in your life. You know, you became a swim instructor at Georgia Southern. You were teaching swimming at Georgia Southern. You know, was there anything that in particular that you said, hey, I want to, this is why I want to swim and teach people how to swim? You know, there is obviously your own enjoyment and you enjoy swimming, but what made you want to teach people? Where did that come from?
Oh, that's a good question. Okay. So the remember, swimming's always been there. It's always been a passion of mine. I've always been good at it. I've always had a coachable spirit.
Okay.
And that's a big deal because there's a lot of people who don't understand what it means to be coachable. It's one thing to be a coach, and it's another thing to learn how to be coached. So those are not the same things, two different lessons. Growing up, I taught my first swim lesson at age 15 for DeKalb County Aquatics. I'll never forget. And I became a WSI at age 17, which is water safety instructor.
Okay.
And I taught throughout college. I didn't realize that I had a gift, meaning that I could do something special that other people couldn't do until I was an adult. Back in 2013, I was diagnosed with something called degenerative disc disease. It's a spinal condition which caused severe nerve and muscular pain that would radiate through my neck, arms, shoulders, even down into my hands.
Wow.
I went from being extremely active. I was very fit. I was, you know, I felt like I was in my prime. I was training 3-4 days a week, best shape of my life. I went from doing that to not being able to hold a gallon of milk.
Oh, wow.
I couldn't. I was in so much pain, and I literally stopped all physical activity for 3 years, would go to work and come home. And I had to get help for little things like carrying the groceries in, things that I was really used to doing. And that diagnosis was a shift. It changed the way I moved. It changed the way that I looked at myself. It had mental and physical consequences. And I found myself searching for who I really was and questioning God and what I was supposed to do. Cause I was young, you know, I was 26 years old. Degenerative disc disease is something that, you know, eventually it will happen to all of us,
mm-hmm.
but not at 26 years old. Ultimately in your 80s, yes, you are going to develop some form of back pain or arthritis. That's normal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not normal for a perfectly healthy, you know, active woman who, you know, played college. I swam. I was doing all the right things. I did yoga to the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. And to make it even worse, it's an invisible illness. So people could not look at me and tell the amount of pain I was in.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I was carrying this and dealing with all of this behind the scenes, no one's expectations changed of me. Not at work, not in my personal life. It was very difficult because I had to be able to communicate, hey, I can't do this today.
My mom actually has degenerative disc disease.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So it's very common.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, you know, and I can even recommend some things for you to do just to help support her when she's dealing with a flare-up, because it's not just a physical condition. It's different when you have a illness that other people can see, because a certain level of compassion that comes with that. But when you have an invisible illness, there is no compassion, especially if you're not able to communicate what you're feeling, when you're feeling it, and how it's affecting you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I shut down. I went through a complete depression, and it was swimming that actually helped me rehabilitate my mind, my body, and eventually my spirit, and helped me get my life back. And gave me a new voice. And
wow.
I laugh because, you know, when I look back at my Georgia Southern days, you know, I graduated from there with a BA in International Studies and Modern Language, emphasis on Spanish, and I had an amazing education and an amazing time there. I participated in leadership activities. My resume was lit. You know, Georgia Southern was good to me. But when I look back at my life and what I prepared myself for career-wise, And I realized that the thing that ended up being my passion, the thing that was going to cause me to advance to the next level, was something that I had in me all along. And it was with me since day one. Yeah, I've always had water.
It was water.
Yeah. And I thought I was going to be an attorney. I was completely groomed to work for someone else. And now here I am, you know, building an entire company and on the journey of entrepreneurship, which is a spiritual journey in itself. And I'm grateful, but and I'm blessed, but I laugh at the irony of my timeline and just watching things connect. It's something that I believe that only God could do.
Yeah, I totally understand what you mean by the irony of your timeline. You know, it brings clarity to you when you look back over it. In the middle of the journey, you can't see it all and how the dots are connecting. But when you look back after time has passed and you're in a different place, you're able to see how all of these things you've experienced, the disc disease, the swimming from day one of your life, and the journey through Georgia Southern, you can see how all of those things play together to produce where you're at in this moment today, you know.
And I am where I am today. I am happier. I'm stronger. I'm wiser. I'm better now than I was pre-diagnosis. I'm stronger physically now than I was pre-diagnosis. And I've learned to look at my health as a total body experience. It's not, I can't just go to the gym and work out or go and do laps and think that that's health. It's not. I have to feed my body what it needs. I have to feed my spirit what it needs. I have to feed my mind what it needs. And when I take care of all three, there's this glow and this peace that comes where it's like I know that no matter what happens, I can handle it. I can't control what happens to me, but I can control how I react to it. And when I balance myself and I take care of myself, mind, body, and spirit, I feel like I have an advantage. And that's an advantage I'll never give up again. And I'll be 32 this year.
Awesome. Let's do this, Noelle. Let me get you to turn your volume down a little bit in your headset for me.
How's that?
Let me see here. Yeah, I think that's perfect. I don't hear anything coming through on my side when I talk to you. That's the only little thing. I heard a little something then, but that could just be my imagination.
That's my imagination. Ooh, running away with me.
What you know about that? What you know about the Temptations?
What you know? Yeah. Let me tell you something, okay? I am an old soul. My favorite song of all time is Love Ballad, LTD, oh, Jesse Osborne. What you know about that?
Ooh.
I can hear that song at any point in time in the day. It doesn't matter what mood I'm in, and it'll elevate me, and I'll just be in my own world.
That's
tear it up. Don't give it to me at karaoke.
That's strong.
It's a rap.
That's strong.
That's
it. That's a strong one. They don't even make me. They just don't make music like that anymore. Look at it. Listen to the title of that. Right. It's called Love Ballad, and it's like, look, we gonna write the love ballad of all love ballads because that's like a whole genre of music within R&B. So they were like, no, we're just gonna write a love ballad, and we're gonna call the song Love Ballad, and it's amazing, and it's long too. It's like what, 6 minutes long?
Listen, because loving you gave me something new. that I never felt before.
And then what a difference. True love is made in my life. Come on, man. Don't let's not do this, Noelle. I'm not doing this with you. Look,
lovers come and then lovers go. That's what folks say though.
That's what they say. Look. Okay, we have gone off the rails here.
Bring it back.
No, that's good though. That's good. That's why I love having my own platform. I can do whatever I want to do with that. So, but yeah,
we were talking about swimming, and we were talking about degenerative disc disease.
Yep.
So let me tell you how degenerative disc disease and swimming ended up connecting.
Okay.
After my diagnosis, I had surgery. And my surgery was successful. I had spinal surgery.
Okay.
And back when I was 28. And so I did physical therapy And none of it was really working. I still had limited range of motion. I would still wake up stiff, and I didn't want to develop scar tissue. So I started getting back in the water and doing my rehab in the pool. And then that turned into me relearning all four strokes to now accommodate my new range of motion. And so in me doing that, not only did I rebuild my upper body strength, but I realized that when I was in the pool, I felt no pain at all. It was the one thing that I could do where if I was having a bad day or a flare-up, I could just go hop in the pool, do my laps, and the next day I would feel amazing. So that gave me confidence. It gave me control. And so right when I was in healthcare, right when I was returning to work, I would go to the pool, and sometimes I would take my goddaughter with me or one of her friends, and I would teach for free. If I was at the pool and you were at the pool too and you wanted to learn something that I was doing, I would teach you. No questions asked. And it didn't feel like work. It was fun for me. It made me feel good to see you accomplish something that you didn't know you could do. And so it was the summertime, and so I was teaching, you know, just one person and then her friend, and then her friend went and told her friend, and then her friend went and told her son's whole baseball team. And the next thing you knew, I had a whole business. So I went to work one day and left with a 2 weeks notice. And I didn't really have a plan on what I was going to do or how I was going to do it. I just knew that I didn't belong where I was. And regaining my health was the confidence that I needed to step out on faith to say, I'm going to find where I belong by any means necessary. So I took that risk. Mm-hmm. And I don't recommend, you know, I'm not telling people to do that, but that's the confidence that I had. I knew that there was something getting ready to happen. I just didn't know what, and I didn't know when. And I knew it wasn't going to happen as long as I stayed at that position. So I made the switch, and I made myself available for God to do what he was going to do in my life. And so I started Love Swim Coaching, which is one of my hashtags on my Instagram page, AfroSwimmers. So when I went online to share these swim videos and, you know, the information that I wanted to present to the world about my recuperation and how swimming was impacting my life, there weren't any current hashtags or communities that I could connect with that weren't advocating a stereotype. So when I see things like, oh, black people swim too, black people surf too, you don't have to say too, because we always did it. The perception is that we don't participate in certain types of sports, but the only reason that perception is valid is because these major swim accounts and the media, they won't promote people of color because they think that that's not their target demographic. But in all actuality, there's an entire community of us doing amazing things in the water. So that's when I started Afro Swimmers. I wanted something that was gender neutral, something that brought people together, something that was healing and validating. And, you know, the Afro and the fist are two of the most common and popular symbols for the black community, mm-hmm. for unity. And white people have Afros too, so it's not even, it surpasses race, but it's about celebrating who you are as you are. And so I love that. I'm going to write that down. it's about celebrating who you are as you are.
Yeah.
And so I started hashtag AfroSwimmers, and I started it from zero, from scratch. Right now, today, I think we have 4,800 posts from swimmers all over the world. The hashtag has become a community, and this community, it blows my mind, the feedback that I'm getting. Like, I didn't think that what I was doing was a big deal until I started meeting other people who had worked with me in the past, and they were sharing their testimony saying, hey, Noelle, listen, I've tried to learn how to swim before, and I've never been able to connect with anybody the way I was able to connect with you in the water. I just felt safe. And because you made me feel safe, I was willing to try things that I couldn't do in the past, emotionally, in the water. And at first, I didn't know what that meant. But I would thank them, and I would say, okay, well, just come back next summer, and we'll do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got my first coaching contract. I coached a USA swimming team, a competitive swim team, for about a year, the Metro Atlanta Aquatic Club. And it was an amazing experience. It opened my eyes to the struggles of having a family with multiple kids who participate in year-long sports. It opened my eyes to the power of mental capacity. I had kids that were in phenomenal physical shape. These kids were ready to compete, but mentally they weren't ready. Some of these kids were dealing with anxiety, depression. Their parents were going through a divorce. And I could see how what they were going through in their personal lives, how they would carry it into the practice and into the pool. It also helped me learn my coaching style, how I talk to kids, how I mentor them, how I communicate in the water, understanding the different types of teaching, you know, people who do well with verbal instruction. Some people require kinetic movement, that you need to move their body for them. Some people are visual. And so understanding that just because you're a good swimmer does not mean that you're just going to be a good coach. Knowing how to swim is not enough to be a good coach. You have to learn how to communicate. You have to learn how to read people's needs and meet those needs. You have to be able to adapt and be creative and change a workout based on someone's physical limitations and abilities. And then listening, understanding what motivates them to be in the water, validating their fears. They're not crazy. They feel what they feel, and it's real to them. And if it's real to them, it's real to me. And so taking that, processing it, and then turning that into a goal, and then holding them accountable till they meet that goal. And that's when I realized I'm doing something special. My clients are actually learning how to swim. Not only are they learning how to swim, they're elevating their health is elevating in other areas of their life. You know, swimming has become a mindfulness activity for them. They go to work, they have stressful, you know, marriages, the kids have a lot going on, you know, traffic is bad, but when they come to the pool, they're not thinking about any of that. All they're thinking about is, what's my next move?
Mm-hmm.
Breathe, rotate, stroke, kick. That's all they're thinking about. And that's something that I realized. I love working with competitive swimmers, and I still do. I'm a technique specialist now, so I am able to break down certain strokes in a way and make it work for people who have irregular conditions or things that would not allow them to learn in a regular class. So, for example, I have a client with severe scoliosis. She has a hump in her back.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that curvature, it makes it hard for her to get her hips up to the surface and rotate, so she keeps sinking. So I have altered the freestyle stroke for her to get her body in a position where she can swim, and she's swimming laps now. And watching her do that, there's a post about it on my professional page, Coach with a Fro. It's on Instagram and Facebook. And you can see a whole post and see her progression and how she moves. And not only that, but it's a form of therapy for her scoliosis, and her posture has improved. But she couldn't have learned that in a group class, because the instructor doesn't have time to provide that one-on-one feedback and provide that custom level of care and experience to just one person when you have six other people in a group.
Yeah, you're personal.
You have to teach it. I'm personal. I'm very personal. And I've had people break down and cry on me. I've been vomited on. I've seen people's reactions to their fear become physical manifestations in the water. And it doesn't surprise me, but it just shows me that it's important that I carry myself in a level of integrity, because I need people to trust me in order to be successful at what I do. So if I need people to trust me, that means I have to be trustworthy.
Yeah.
And that's something that I carry.
It's always bigger than what we do. It's more, always more to it, because, you know, when you're touching people, it becomes really a spiritual thing always, I believe. And, I think that's, you know, even with Culture and Conversations, my podcast, I think it's always about connecting with people's spirits. And if you can work in that area of their life for a moment, then you're going to get some great content. And in your work, it's the same thing you're doing as you help people through their fears, as you help people through learning the techniques and developing that confidence. At the end of the day, you can watch YouTube videos if you really want to just learn, you know, bare bones mechanics about swimming, I'm sure. But if you really want that, if you really want to grow and develop as a person in the process of swimming, then I can see why what you're offering people, Noelle, is very valuable in terms of learning how to swim and being coached how to swim. You're almost like a life coach in the water, it seems like.
I get that a lot. They sometimes there's a joke where my swimmers will come. They go, "Coach Noelle, come tell me about my life." I wear that as a badge of honor. Yes. And I've learned so much about life through my obstacles that I'm able to truly empathize with my students and my clients about what they're going through. I don't have sympathy for them. I have empathy for them. And there's a difference.
Yeah.
Because I know they can get through it. But it's something about validating somebody else's experience. It's so powerful. I mean, when you want to get somebody who's defensive to become non-defensive, that just try to understand.
Well, that's...
And sometimes I still don't understand, but it's the effort that makes them want to talk to you and want to share with you. And from there, I can learn to see something differently from their perspective, even if it's not my own.
Yeah, that's really the spirit behind, I think, how we crossed paths and began to network a little bit. We were engaging on a social media post, and I won't spend much time talking about what that post was, but to your point about empathy, when I made my comments trying to empathize with the group of people who felt most attacked by that statement that was in that post, you know, that's when, that's when you responded and were like, "Hey, this is it. This is kind of what we're looking for here." And as we engage this idea that's been posted out there, and, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not always great at empathy. I wish I was better at it. I think that's something that women, I think, have a little bit better EQ for, just based on how you guys can see the world from your vantage point versus how men typically see our world and how our brains kind of...
We're very intuitive.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that gives you a great empathetic heart towards different things. But that is how you connect with people, to your point, is through empathy. And, that's where... That is really, I think, the gift of a great coach or a great instructor or a great teacher. It's not just that you're imparting information, but that you're also understanding the complete person as you try to give them that information. Why are you feeling this way?
Exactly.
You know,
I wish I could just, do you remember, Key and Peele when they did pretended to be the Obama translators?
Yes. Yes.
I wish I could carry you around to translate, even though I feel like I do a good job of communicating, and I'm a student of communication. So it's a requirement for me and the people who are in my life. I communicate. I have to. But I'm not I'm always learning better ways to do it. So by no means am I speaking as an expert, but I am speaking as somebody who understands the importance of it and that I'll never stop learning how to communicate. But I love the way that you word things.
Wow.
I really do. Like, I remember I saw your comment and I was just like, yes. I felt like you took the words right out of my spirit and just typed them on the internet, and now they were there forever.
Yeah, well,
and that's definitely what led me to you. And then, how did you put it? I was raising hell. Is that what you said?
You're talking about on the internet.
When you said when you found me, you was like, "Who is this girl raising hell?"
Yeah,
with the afro.
Who's this girl raising hell with a dope afro? That's what I said. I was like, "Who's this?"
Now, in addition to being empathetic and communicating, I'm also an advocate.
Yeah.
So, you know, I speak up when I have to. I voice my concerns when I have to, and I correct when I have to. And you can do that in love. You don't have to be vindictive or offensive to correct someone.
No, and it takes courage.
And that's what... Mm-hmm.
It takes courage. Let me see if I can pull up the exact thing that I said to you. Because we were talking about looking up your page, and I said I did look you up. I was curious who was raising hell on the page with the banging hair. That's what I said. The banging hair. Yeah.
So what did I say?
And you said, "This is exclusive content, Culture and Conversations family. We are reading text messages or messages in DMs on the show." You said, "Ha ha ha ha." I think I got the right number of ha's in there. And you said, "Well, you got me." And actually, so and so was raising hell, and I just brought heaven back to earth. So I can appreciate your sentiments with that. So, but you know, I think that's my gift. One of the things I found, and I'm not saying this because I'm trying to toot my own horn or I'm trying to pile on to what you said, flattering about
me. Go on and toot it.
But you know, one of the things Noel people tell me. One of the things people tell me all the time is that I have a really good heart for listening, and I'm sure some ex-girlfriends will kind of sneer at that comment, but
listen, that is a gift. It is a gift because a lot of people listen to respond. They don't listen to understand, and I'm guilty of that too. You know, I've been there, and I have to check myself and take a step back. But brother, I appreciate you. And if you haven't heard that this week, please hear it from me. You know, I appreciate your gift. Words are powerful. What you say matters, and how you say it matters even more. And you can either build people up with your words or you can tear them down. And, you know, I've definitely had to check some folks before. Now I'm here for it. If I got time, oh, we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I already know what my gifts are and I use my strengths every single day. You don't want to get into a verbal altercation with me, especially if you're not 100% sure that you know what you're talking about. But I'm learning that there's a grace to it too. Just because, let's say I am right about someone, I'm realizing that that doesn't mean I have to tell them about themselves. That doesn't mean that I have to be right in that moment. Sometimes life has a way of bringing people back around in a more graceful way, and they can come around in the back end and say, hey, listen, you know, when I said this, I recognized that I was out of line. I just wanted you to know I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But if you out here reading people and going off on them, you take that opportunity away.
Yeah.
That could have strengthened your relationship. So that's something that I'm learning now. I don't have to correct everybody. I don't have to check everybody. Now, there's some times where I just know I have time, but there's other moments where I'm learning to be quiet and to be still. And that's where I am now, and it's beautiful.
You can.
It really is.
I'm gonna give you some dope stuff here. So this is. I'm about to give you some. I'm about to give you some grade A material here. All right,
man, get in there.
The first piece, Noel, is that, you know, with conflict, you can either be the volcano that produced the Hawaiian Islands, or you can be the volcano that destroyed Pompeii. The volcano that destroyed Pompeii and the volcano that produced the Hawaiian Islands are both volcanic eruptions. They're nasty. They're gases, hot, fire, lava, you know, brimstone stuff. The earth is shaking when they're going off. All of that's still going on, right? Explosions, all of that. But one produced paradise and one destroyed the entire area and surrounding environment. So when I approach conflict, that's what I'm trying to go for. I'm trying to produce the Hawaiian Islands. I want paradise afterwards. Some people approach conflict. They want Pompeii. They want to destroy everything. And yeah, both are eruptions. Both are difficult moments. Both are going to be tough. But one produced paradise and one produced destruction and chaos. So that's my first tidbit.
That's your, I just want to piggyback off that. That's a beautiful analogy. You're a peacekeeper. And the thing is, peace has to be created. It's already there. It's available to you, but you have to create it. And then once you create it, then you have to keep it. You have to maintain it.
Preserve it.
And so, And so there are, now there's moments where, you know, you'll get a fire in you. Like, you'll know when it's time to turn the heat up and when you need to shake things up. Because there's a time and a place for everything. There's a time to fight. But like you said, you have to know what you want your outcome to be before you go into the fight.
Exactly.
And so are you what do you want to create here? Do you want to create more chaos or do you want to create something beautiful? And I appreciate your insight on that. That's dope.
And my second one that I'm going to give you is that when God called Israel out of Egypt, you know, they were slaves in Egypt. And God calls them out. Moses does all of these mighty works to, you know, communicate that he is a messenger from God. And finally, Israel comes out and they're in the wilderness and they need to be led. As a leader, you've got two options. That God shows us those options. You can be the pillar of fire or you can be the pillar of cloud. The pillar of cloud by day is a beautiful, it's a majestic sight. It's, you know, it's calming, it's soothing. But in darkness, when you need to see, sometimes you have to be the pillar of fire, which is blazing, which is destructive, which is very matter of fact. So that's how I look at that duality that God shows in leadership. You got times where you got to be the pillar of cloud, where you've got to be softer, where you got to be gentler, but you still got to be visible. That's the whole thing about leadership. You're in the front. You're leading. You're going ahead of the people. But in times of darkness, in times of danger, when you still got to, and in times where it's hard to see the way, you got to be the pillar of fire, and you got to have that fieriness in you to push people to where they got to go and show people how to get there.
Man, I actually just posted a comment. Shout out to Ramon Anjurin. He is one of my favorite people. Was a brother of Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity in the Xi Tau chapter at Georgia Southern University. And there's this quote that I said when I was Miss Black and Gold 11 years ago. And Facebook actually ended up reminding me of this quote. And I sent him a copy and just laughed at the irony. And so I said this 11 years ago, and I actually reposted it for Martin Luther King Day. And it says, sometimes as a leader, you have to push others, and you can't push from the front.
No, you got to get, but you got to get
behind. You can't push. You got to get behind people. And, you know, some people would say, oh, well, you can pull them. Not the same thing. Mm-mm. Sometimes when you pull someone, they fall. They're not ready because now you're dragging their weight. But when you push someone, you're able to go longer. They can move at their pace with your backing and support. And, I said this 11 years ago, and I never knew what I was saying until now. And I look at my career, and I look at what I do every day, and I am doing exactly that, something I spoke into existence 11 years ago. Wow.
Let's recenter our conversation a little bit, too, Noelle, as we began to kind of wrap up this piece about swimming. You know, one of the things you mentioned about the stigma around the African-American community and swimming is, mm-hmm. you know, is interesting. And I put some notes together, some real small notes as my, in my show prep. You know, one of the things mm-hmm. that people have to, who are listening to this have to understand is that part of what made swimming taboo or difficult or just not a part of the African-American experience holistically is that we oftentimes were excluded from having access to municipal swimming pools because of segregation and racism. So you couldn't go to the pool in town and swim, and you couldn't go and swim when other people were swimming, or you weren't allowed to swim at all because depending on how racist people were, they would drain the whole pool, you know, depending on, you know, how crazy they looked at, you know, quote unquote, the black kids swimming in the pool. Also, just as we give more context culturally, I believe this to be true is that also swimming in terms of having pools at your house and, you know, it takes a certain level of affluence. And I'm not saying that that's always everybody's story, obviously, but when you look at it, it takes a lot of space and it takes money because a pool is a very discretionary sort of expense. So, you know, when you combine all of those factors together, you get a community of people who they, you know, like they love the, we love the water, you know, we love swimming. I mean, playing around in the water, but we don't necessarily have the skill set intrinsically as a part of our culture. So that's why I think what you're doing, Noelle, is interesting because you're bringing not only awareness to the community of people who already do swim, but because we oftentimes will gravitate to what we see that looks like us. Now you're making it more accessible to the community of people who want to swim in the African-American community because they see people who look like you and who look like them who are swimming and doing it at a high level.
Ooh, you just, let me... Okay, so to dissect that, you are right on the money. You're correct. Number one, swimming is expensive, okay? It is expensive to own a pool. It is expensive to operate a pool. And it is expensive to participate in aquatic-related sports. You need equipment. You need special suits. And then add on top of all of those expenses, add on hair care for a little black girl, because she's going to need her hair braided. She's going to need a special shampoo, special conditioner, leave-in conditioners. She's going to need products. Okay. And so that's an additional expense that has not been addressed. Number two, let's talk about the racial aspect. If you want to see, swimming is an extremely segregated sport. And if you want to see modern day segregation, go to a aquatic center on the white side of town, okay, or in a predominantly white area. Look at the quality of the pool. Look at the resources. Look at, the size of the pool, okay? Now go look at a inner city pool or a pool in a predominantly black area and compare them. It is not separate but equal.
It's night and day.
At all. The resources aren't the same. The quality of the resources aren't the same. The participation is not the same. The quality of the instructors is not the same. It's an issue. It's an issue from top to bottom. It's an issue. And yes, people complain about it here or there, but I don't see anybody actively, effectively taking action against it until now.
Mm-hmm.
And so also let's talk about history. Trauma is genetic. So, for example, if your grandmother did not know how to swim, she's not going to take her kids and her daughter to the swimming pool because she's going to take them to activities where she can protect them,
mm-hmm.
not have to rely on somebody else to keep them safe, so i.e. things on land. So because you never grew up around water, now you have children, and you expose your children to sports that you were exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And mind you, you can't swim either. And so now your kids can't swim. And so now it's a cycle of land-related sports, not because you can't swim, not because you are incapable of swimming, but because you never learned how, and because the fear of your great-grandmother was passed down generationally through tradition and lifestyle.
That's it.
And so now, we have to question that. We have to call that out and say, Why am I really afraid of water? And then also there's something called post-traumatic slave syndrome, where they're talking about the trauma that was created during the transatlantic slave trade of being locked in a boat, and how people have inherited that trauma and fear. Now that goes deep, but I don't invalidate it. It's a very interesting concept, and it's something that makes sense when I start dealing with phobias. You know, these phobias, they come from so many different places, and it's more than just Hollywood and TV and watching shows like Jaws. I recently had a breakthrough with a client. She wasn't black, but it's such a powerful story, and I really want to share it with you. I had a client. I've only worked with her twice. She's had 2 1-hour sessions with me. She's almost drowned 4 times. All 4 attempts that she's tried to learn, she has almost drowned. She's from Belarus, Russia. So there's a language barrier, there's a racial barrier, there's a cultural barrier, okay? So she's working with me. I do a full consultation with her. I tell her what I can do. I tell her what I can't do and what I expect from her. We get into the pool. And the first day, I can feel her tension in her muscles. The way that she touches me, I can feel her fear. Literally, she didn't even have to tell me. I could feel it.
Mm-hmm.
So I take it very slow, and I reassure her, and I break everything down into small steps, and she comes and she practices. So the second day, she had a fear of putting her face in the water, which is completely understandable considering that she's almost drowned 4 times. So I broke it down. We took it slow. The second day, she does it. She puts her face in the water, and I actually recorded it, and I have footage of this. And so afterwards, she kept touching her chest and patting her chest and rocking back and forth, and she was just so happy, and she gave me the biggest hug, and I almost cried. And so I asked her, I was like, Tatiana, are you okay? And she was like, yes. She said, I haven't put my face in water in 30 years, not even in the shower, because I was scared.
Wow. Wow.
She has not had water on her face for 30 years. I get goosebumps even talking about it. And she did it with me in our second lesson.
Oh, that's amazing. You know, you're helping, you're really helping people, you know, and you're developing confidence in something that you lack confidence in can help you develop confidence in other parts of your life that are, that seem unrelated to what you're doing. So that's something that she'll carry with her, because she broke through that tension and the bondage of that fear that she was experiencing.
But fear, understand, yes, exactly. And I'm grateful for all of that. But it also really humbled me just by understanding the power that fear can have over people's lives. So when you talk about the Black community and why people don't swim, you know, pools historically, especially in the United States, and even more so in the South, pools were not safe places for us, not physically, not emotionally, not racially. There are pictures, you know, especially Black History Month popping up, you're going to see these images where that they would throw acid in the pool to get the Black people out and to keep them out, or they would say that it was unsanitary now because we got in. Mm-hmm. Pools were a hostile environment. And there are further readings that you can do that are posted on AfroSwimmers that back up all of these claims that I'm making. So this is not my opinion. I'm referring to historical moments and facts in American history. But there's tension there that never healed. And so now, as a Black woman with natural hair, I love the looks on people's faces when they book me and they don't know what I look like. And then they walk in and they see that I'm their coach. I see it never gets old, and it does not offend me. It makes me proud. Well, it makes me very proud, because it's like, you're going to get this lesson today. You're going to get this grade A coaching from someone who looks like me. And then you're going to go home and challenge your own perspectives so that you can check yourself with the stereotypes that you walk in with. I don't even have to say anything. My work speaks for itself.
That's it. Noelle, I think that's a great place to wrap up our conversation. What are the resources that you have online that people can reference to learn more about you? What's your social media handles? I saw that you worked all those plugs in seamlessly into the interview. So, you know, I said, look at Noelle trying to get these plugs in case I don't ask her at the very end. But I ask all my, you know, guests at the very end to tell me about what they've got going on so people can find them and they can get the exposure from the show.
Absolutely. Well, social media is a big part of what I do, because that's where I control the narrative. So if you want, definitely follow AfroSwimmers. AfroSwimmers, it's plural. It's on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Follow the hashtag AfroSwimmers. If you click on it, you can see people all over the world doing amazing things in the water. If you need to reach out to me, my email is noelle@afroswimmers.com. That's N-O-E-L-L-E. And to learn more about me and my personal story, you can follow my professional account, which is Coach with the Fro, Noelle Singleton. And all of these tags are featured on the AfroSwimmer page. If anybody has questions about hair care, swim care, or you've had an experience, a traumatic experience in water that you want to share and just want, you know, encouragement to push through that, I welcome your DMs. I welcome your emails. Reach out to me. I always respond. Not immediately, but you will get a response from me. And I'm here to empower you and to rebuild our community. I'm here for you. So let's do it.
Cool.
One more.
Cool. That was a professional sign off there. So, Noelle, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take all of those links that you have mentioned to your social media accounts, and I will put mm-hmm. them in the show notes so that the listeners can see it on their phone or whatever device they're listening to the podcast on. And I will have all that available to be clickable from the website for cultureandconversations.com as well.
Awesome.
Cool. So, Noelle, I've got another conversation. But first off, let me thank you for being a part of this conversation. So I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Hey guys, I forgot to shout out somebody that I really want to shout out. So I'm going to hit the theme music and we're going to be out of here after I say this. But my buddy Tyler Shorter, he has been going through a tough time. He's got some things going on in his family. He lost his mother not too long ago and she passed away. And I hope this isn't too much of your business, Tyler. I apologize if it is. But man, I just want to tell you in front of all my friends and all my listeners and all my audience that I love you, buddy. And I was really sorry for your loss. And I just wanted to thank you for just being as strong as you've been over the last couple of days, the last couple of weeks. as you've been going through this with your family. And I just want to encourage you, man, through the way that I know how to do it, through the podcast, because you were the day one supporter of the show. And I just wanted to, I wanted the show to say something to you, man. So Tyler, man, it's going to get better. Be strong, dude. Continue to do the great things that you're doing. Continue to work on reviving your podcast, man. We're looking forward to it. Shout out to hashtag the shorter hour that's coming soon, hopefully. And, you guys, man, if you guys, know Tyler or you're familiar with him on his appearances on Culture and Conversations, be sure to say something nice and kind to him, and just give him a word of encouragement, and continue to think about him and say something funny to him, because, you know, he likes to laugh and I like to laugh at the things he likes to laugh at. So say something funny to him and give him a great story to share with me later on. So Tyler, man, I'm thinking about you guys, man, thinking about you, thinking about the wife, Amber, thinking about Macy. And, soon we'll cross paths again, buddy, and hang out a little bit, man, but just keep you holding up your head up high, man. And, you're an amazing guy, dude. I'm glad to call you my friend. And all that stammering should tell you that this is not edited, man. So be good, Tyler. I can't wait to talk to you soon, man. And with that, we are at the end of this episode of Culture and Conversations. Thank you again, Noel Singleton, for stopping by and being a part of the conversation. Remember, guys, Noel Singleton is the swim coach with the Fro. You can find her on Instagram, Coach with the Fro. And I'm going to link to her Instagram profile so that you guys can find her real easy. Man, if you guys want to find Culture and Conversations on Facebook, Culture and Conversations is the Facebook page. We also got a Facebook group for people who want to get closer and more intimate access to the show. Also, man, please stop by Instagram, Culture and Conversations. If you rock over there, we are over there letting you guys know about the show coming out. I'm going to do some more content on Instagram soon, but hey, man, hang in there with me, man. We're trying to figure this thing out one podcast at a time. And lastly, man, if you want to tell me how great my radio voice is and flatter me the way that you guys do, you can reach out to me via email, cultureandconversations@gmail.com. Lastly, man, as my wonderful, beautiful goddaughter would say, and I think this is the last episode I'm going to use that drop at the end. I think we're going to change it up and start using that drop at the beginning, guys. So you guys be good, man. Stay good out there. Stay blessed out there. Stay well out there. And man, have a great day. Peace. I killed that episode. Woo!